Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here, joined as always by my co-host Matt Wasko and great friend. How's it going today, Matt?
I am very pumped. Had a great rocking morning today at Anytime Fitness. And as again, we're sitting here recording on the floor of Anytime Fitness and the numbers are picking up. So I'm very excited to see the energy for people's health.
Yeah, very high energy. I would agree. It was a great morning.
It was a good morning.
And today we are going to jump into our Fit Focus, and it may take the majority of our episode, and that's okay. But Matt really wanted to dive a little deeper, and I agree with him. Dive a little deeper into some of the history behind dietary recommendations in this country and in this world. We've kind of touched on it before, how we feel a lot of the nutritional guidelines don't match up with what we should do, but there's a lot of history behind it.
Well, and it gets down to, and Parker's got a strong opinion on this, but, you know, how did we get here, right? How did we get to the point to where cold cereal's good, lard is not good, or when you have, you know, vegetable oil, good, seed oil's good, and we left tallow behind, you know, where eggs, bad, you know, red meat, bad. How did we get here, right? And we know from research, especially in the last 20 years, that was all baloney. So why did it happen? So, you know, getting down to the extreme details of why decisions were made, that they were, at the very least, we know that they were not decisions that were for the best interest of mankind. That we know. So we did a little research. And you know, and in the 1950s, the AHA was coming out and advertising the, I think it was called, if I remember right, the Prudent Diet, where they were promoting these products that are made refined carbs, refined sugars, so like your enriched flour and your cereals.
Vegetable oils.
Vegetable oil, yeah. Pushing these seed oils and saying they helped lower your LDL, okay? So we are finding out after decades of heart disease that started up to an exponential, I mean, like almost a pandemic level of so much heart disease in the last, 80 years since the 1950s. So, and maybe I'd probably really hit in the 1960s, 1970s, but the point is why were they pushing this? I'm posing that to you for a second.
I want to touch on something else first, and that is that you talked about the timeline here, the 1950s. Back then, you know, media and communication was very different than it is now.
Right.
Because now we have the ability to see many different perspectives, anybody's perspective. We have social media. Anybody can get on there, do some research, spread some information. So we have different angles and different opinions attacking us from all vectors. And that's a challenge in and of itself. However, the issue back then was that there was only one vector that was displayed to people when it came to communication, and that was the mainstream media.
Right.
That was it, right? Mainstream newspapers, mainstream television stations, you know, you had three TV stations, and, you know, we talked about the dietary recommendations. They were displayed on every TV station.
Right.
And surely newspapers as well, and that was the only way that people consumed media back then. So if you were going to get some research, you were going to get this. You were going to get this diet recommendation. You weren't able to find other stuff out there. So And I'm sure there was plenty of distrust for the media even back then, as there is now. It's obviously more now. But if that's all you see, it's hard to not believe it.
Well, think about three channels back in the 1950s.
Matt, what was it like back then?
Oh, my God. Okay, is that where we're going? You saw an opening and you took it. Getting back on topic. So in 1950s, there was three stations compared to what now? Like endless sources of information.
Oh, endless. Everywhere.
Yeah. So that both like anything, that's both good and bad. So if you're a government or you understand if you can get control of putting your message out, think of the power you have. Because there's only three stations in the 1950s. If you become an organization, AHA, and you want to control a narrative, you can be very powerful in that message. Being TV was brand new. It only been around for literally in the 1950s. There wasn't necessarily TVs in every household, but there was a good portion. And so then you're faced with, okay, I can control what the message is, which means I can control the population.
You can control what people do and how they make decisions.
That's exactly right.
And that's exactly what they did. Now, the motivation behind that, we can discuss that and some of the different options, but you know, I want to make it clear that that's what we were facing back then, is one way to receive information, one way to learn things. You had on one hand the way that things were always done, but then on the other hand, you had them saying, that's wrong, that's unhealthy for you, that's not the right way to do it. We need to switch to doing it this other way because it's better for you.
Right.
Research has shown, and you can't refute it. You have no way to refute it. You don't really know the difference. They could come out back then and they could say, oh, you know, everyone's dying from heart attacks from eating too much red meat. Well, you couldn't go out and refute that, because there wasn't a way to communicate and spread information that went against the mainstream narrative the way that there is today. Because
right.
If the mainstream media comes out and says something today, then somebody that caught a video, a random person that caught a video behind the scenes showing what actually happened, can release it and then refute what the release on social media, and then that goes against what the mainstream media is saying, and now everyone knows. It's kind of like the, you know, a lot of the stuff coming out from the assassination attempt. You know, the mainstream media said one thing, and then all these videos start coming out after the fact of like, oh, this is a different angle, this is showing what actually happened. And we start to realize that just because the mainstream media says it's not necessarily the case, but we didn't have that ability to refute it back then.
Well, I mean, again, think about just happened in the last, you know, week. You know, we have a significant portion of the illegal immigrants coming in, and there was reports of animals being eaten. And in the debate, you just heard them say, that's not true. But you have video after video after video of the population saying it is absolutely true, and the police departments are not refuting that it's not true. So,
exactly.
You know, so that's what you have today. You have what the government or what the media is saying, then what the population is seeing and now can communicate.
Exactly.
Right?
So we can kind of prove nowadays that's what happens. Mainstream media is not always telling us the truth. What they're telling us is very strategic, though. There's a reason for it. So now we can start to kind of unpack, you know, the mainstream media is telling us something. Back in the 1950s, they're putting it all over the television stations. It's coming directly from the AHA, the American Health Association, who is a governmental agency funded by the government. And it's coming from them, and it's communicated to us, but why?
Right.
Okay. Now what we have to think about is, what were they telling us that, or what were we eating that they're telling us is bad for us? And then what are the new things they're telling us to eat instead?
Right. Which is completely, seemed to be dichotomies in health.
So they said, you know, saturated fats, red meats, butter, eggs, all of these foods, high in saturated fats, high in cholesterol levels, are bad for you.
Right.
They're causing harm to you. You shouldn't eat them. And instead, you should replace those things in your diet one-to-one with these other things. And the other things were, you know, vegetable oils, margarines, cereals, right? So instead of, you shouldn't cook with butter or beef tallow anymore. You should cook with vegetable oil.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't eat eggs for breakfast anymore. You should eat this cereal. Don't use lard, use margarine, you know, and these one-to-one change outs is what they're recommending. And people throughout all of the history before that had been eating those other things, the eggs, the butter, and then now they're being told to completely switch all of that for the sake of their health.
Well, a modern day example of that would be Beyond Meat products, right? They sell it as you don't have to eat meat, but you can eat things that taste like meat, right? If you ever look at the products that they put in those Beyond Meat products, or I would say, you know, vegan hamburger, stuff like that. If you ever look at the products they put in there, extraordinarily bad for you.
Yeah.
Extraordinarily. But yet they're marketed as healthy, a healthy alternative to red meat. So the irony is unbelievable. But going back, Dudley Moore, okay? So Dudley Moore, 1920s, started his practice in 1920. I think it was 1920 or 21. He didn't see, and he was on the American Heart Association board. Anyway, he was a cardiologist, believed in fitness, good diet, and staying off refined sugars and refined carbs. So obviously they were in existence at that time. And doing a little research, we find out refined carbs and refined sugars were around in 18th, 19th century, but weren't prevalent amongst the public until the 20th century. Probably not really used because, as we discovered a little bit ago, as you've discovered, grocery stores weren't mainstream until the 50s. So then now the refined sugars and carbs are really now in the mainstream. Because that's like, well, hey, I can just go. I don't have to raise my own cattle and my own chickens and my eggs. And I can just go to the grocery store and get it. And now what do you have? You have more control over what the population's eating.
Exactly. Because if you're, say you're back in the early 20th century and there are no grocery stores and everyone still farms their own food and you get told, don't eat eggs anymore, don't eat red meat, don't eat butter, eat these vegetable oils and margarines and stuff instead, you're going to say, well, I can't do that. Like, this is what my farm and my animals produce. That's what I have to eat. I can't make, how do I make vegetable oil myself on my farm? Like, you right. can't, you know, so right. you don't have an option until these food processing facilities, industrial facilities, and then shipping and then grocery stores are able to bring it to the consumer.
Right.
It's not possible until then.
Right. Yeah. So come to find out in the 19th century, heart attacks were almost non-existent. I mean, literally you didn't have a lot of overweight people, right? I mean, that was a rarity. Cause they didn't have all the refined foods and processed foods. Now, you know, being obese is an epidemic, right? It's very difficult to find good food, as we've talked about many times. So Dudley Moore was one of the lone cardiologists that stood up against this push in the 1950s to push this prudent diet, right? And they were saying that these animal-based products were causing heart disease, which is the furthest thing from truth. And I think it was Ansel Keys, that was the one that, you know, came out and was saying this, is saying animal-based products are causing all these problems. And he's famous for the seven country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we have to look at, because I want to kind of pose the question of, they're recommending these things, but there's a reason why.
Yes.
What's the why, right? And that's where Ansel Keys kind of comes in, is they're pushing these things but they have to have some sort of basis, some sort of standing for why they're telling us this. And it all boiled down to Ansel Keys and his seven country study,
right?
Which was funded by who?
AHA,
the American Heart Association. Right. They gave him funding to study these countries, and essentially what he did, it wasn't really a like a experimental group and a control group. It was just the 20 countries, and he went into each one and he studied the dietary habits that already existed in those countries.
Right.
And then what he did, he kind of plotted on a graph. One axis would be how much saturated fats and cholesterols that country consumed,
right,
what level, and then the other axis would be what was their prevalence of heart disease.
Right.
And he was trying to show correlation between saturated fat, cholesterol intake, and heart disease.
Right.
And he studied a total of 20 countries. Well, that's interesting. 20 countries. I thought we said it was the seven country study.
Right.
What is a seven country study? Because he only published seven countries. And what he did was, if you think about, he had all these countries and their correlation, and the 20 countries, there wasn't a correlation between saturated fat and cholesterol levels and heart disease. It didn't correlate. It didn't show that increased saturated fat and cholesterol levels caused more heart disease. However, if he strategically pulled out the data from 13 of those countries and only left a specific seven countries in, now if you looked at the graph, it looked like there was strong correlation between saturated fat and cholesterol intake and heart disease.
Right.
So what we really have here as the reason and the data behind why we're going to push this change of pulling out all these things from the diet that have saturated fat and cholesterol and put these new processed foods in, it's all based off cherry-picked data to show exactly what we want it to show.
Right. Yeah.
That's what it boils down to. They cherry-picked the data to show exactly what they wanted it to show. They threw out the data that didn't support their reasoning, and then they published it to the entire country, the entirety of the American people, as gospel.
So I would call that doctoring the results.
100%.
100%.
Of course it is.
Yeah. And I find that technically, I'm going to use the word, and it may be too, but I find that evil, because you look at the absolute carnage of that has happened since then, the number of deaths that have happened because of that doctored research. So then it comes down to, all right, he doctored it. What was his motivation? I mean, we can take some wild guesses, but you know, you could make the argument that there's been plans to circumvent the American way for 100 years. You know, that's my own personal opinion. But
Matt, I want you to, can you pull up an inflation calculator on your iPad?
Yeah.
Real quick? I want you to pull that up, and because here's the thing, I have here a page pulled up about this seven country study, and it shows here that in 1956, Ansel Keys was given this grant from the U.S. Public Health Service of $200,000. To do this study.
1956.
So I want you to plug in 1956 and $200,000 and tell me what that equates to today.
Okay. Bear with me.
My guess is we're going to be well into the millions.
$2,349,223. So that is about...
Like almost $2.5 million.
Yeah, almost $2.5 million.
Okay. So now we'll just put it that way. Imagine somebody today say, hey, we want you to do a study. Here's $2.5 million.
Yeah.
That sound like a little bit of motivation, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. $200,000. You can do it back then. If someone gave me $2.5 million, I could do a significant amount of things. It could change my life.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I don't know. You know, they may have told them, hey, do the study, you know, spend like $1 million on the study, and then you can keep the other $1.5 million. Just make sure that the study comes out exactly how we want it to come out.
Yeah.
And that's the problem in situations like this, is we don't really know the motivation for sure why the data was cherry-picked the way it was cherry-picked.
Right.
But, you know, Ansel Keys was a trusted source. He was a physician. He was on this panel for the American Heart Association. And if he was willing to stand up there and present this as factual, people were going to believe him because he had credibility.
Right.
It's kind of like us on this podcast. We're personal trainers. We're nutritionists. We've trained hundreds of people. We have credibility of what we present.
Right.
He had credibility. And so, you know, if some random person got up there, or some, you know, somebody in a different field of study or profession got up there and said these things, they wouldn't really be believed. But they needed somebody that could have the expertise and be trustworthy to present this. That way the people would believe it.
Right. Well, I think also one of the things he promoted was the Mediterranean diet, which makes me think he did a study of some Mediterranean countries where he got the results he wanted. I'm making an assumption there. You know, because, you know, Ansel Keys, you know, I'm looking up here, he made the relationship between diet and heart disease, and he advised the Mediterranean diet for the simple reason that he wanted to reduce saturated fat, right? And then Dudley Moore, in contrast, he focused on the things that me and you train and teach all the time. That is a healthy lifestyle, exercise, animal-based diet, and stress management. We talk about that all the time. Okay, those are all. I'll give you an example. I just in the last month, no, I'd say last 6 weeks, I've done. I'm a trainer, but I get, you know, questions about meal plans. And my advice to the people that I've done meal plans for, I have an athlete that is wanting to play for Missouri, and he needs to gain 50 pounds. He came in, he weighed 159, so 40 pounds. I want to be 200, so 40 pounds. And I put him on a diet. Because me and you both understand how diet works, he's gained 9 pounds in 6 weeks. 9 pounds. Okay. I have another person that she's starting to train with me again, but she's a nurse, and she wants to lose all her excess fat, understanding animal-based products and how they work and how to add and how to take off. She's lost 5 pounds, and she hadn't worked out because she had surgery. So here's the thing that people, if you eat healthy on animal-based products, you can control what your body does. Absolutely.
Well, it's very interesting to me that you gave two very different situations. And obviously the dietary recommendations are different, but the base is the same.
Exactly the same, yeah.
Whether you're a young athlete wanting to put on 40 pounds or a middle-aged person looking to trim down, the base of what you're going to do is the exact same, and that's kind of what we want to talk about here. The differences then from there are just, you know, we scale up, we scale down, we play with macros a little bit, but the basics are the same. Mm-hmm. The protein, the red meat, eggs, fruits and vegetables, high quality, non-processed food, that's the base of it, no matter who you are.
Right. Yeah, one thing I don't have on any of the meal plans that I've done is processed foods.
No cereal.
No cereal.
No vegetable oil.
We were just talking about this. So I've seen online, maybe it was on the internet, I can't remember, but commercials for cereal that is considered, you can't buy in the grocery stores, it's considered healthy, but yet it's formed in these cute little shapes, right? And mimicking all the, you know, tricks and Lucky Charms and, you know, but they're the healthy Lucky Charms, right? Really, cereal has no place at our table. I don't care, you know, if you have to take it and form it into something to make it look like cereal, you're already behind the ball, right? It's just the things that, you know, we grew up with in the 19th and early 20th century, and that is eggs, bacon, sausage, lard, butter, the things we've been eating for thousands of years, and only in the 20th century did we want to decide to change that.
Let me ask you a question, Matt. You've got a, you're no farmer by any means, but you've got a freezer, freezer of beef at home. Where did those steaks come from?
Well, first of all, I'm not a farmer by any means, but I do have farming in my blood. Okay, all right.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that my whole family's from farming. I just happen to be raised in the city. Okay, so. Anyway, your question was, what do I? Where did my beef come from?
Well, how did you end up with a steak in your freezer? What's the process look like that goes that steak goes through to get to your freezer?
Well, I know that, you know, cows are raised until they are, I want to say a year, year and a half, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and then they're ready for processing, and by that, I don't mean, you know, processed foods, but where they're ready to go to the butcher, and he processes the meat and hangs it, drains the water out of it, cuts it up, sells it to me, and, well, I mean, I give you a check, and I pay the processor, and then I pick up the frozen meat and goes in my fridge.
All makes sense, right?
Yeah.
It's a very simple process. Very simple process. You have an animal, you know, you kill the animal, you cut the animal into different pieces, you freeze the meat, and it's there.
Right.
It's very intuitive. It makes sense. You could say the same thing about eggs. How do you get an egg? You know, how do you get butter? I mean, these are not necessarily everybody understands that if they don't have much of an agricultural background, but it's a simple process to understand.
Right.
Now I want to ask you, how do you get cereal?
Talk me through that process. I couldn't even. All I know is that some, I would have to see it to know it. I don't know how they get it.
Exactly. I have no idea either.
Yeah.
What all process goes into creating cereal?
Yeah.
All process goes into creating these vegetable oils? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't pull it out of the ground, milk it off a cow, you know, take it off the top of a creamer, you know.
Pick it off a tree.
And you have to take all these products and then throw things that are not even that we would eat naturally. And you have to mix in all these kind of, you know, chemicals and things into your food and call it food. It's no longer food.
I would agree.
Yeah. So you think about these two people, Ansel and Dudley, and you think about who's had a greater impact on the health industry. You know, well, it'd be Ansel.
Well, here's my opinion a little bit on this guy, this Ansel Keys. You know, he had this study. The study was funded for him to do way back in 1956, and he does his study, cherry picks data, whatever, publishes it, and all of a sudden it blows up and becomes mainstream, and it's the only way that we've preached diet for the last 60, 70 years.
Right.
And that's it. That's right. The facts. And nothing else can come over the top of that. And all from one study, from one guy that way a long time ago, and we're still having the negative ramifications of it today, and it's plaguing our society and making our society unhealthy and killing people all because of that. You know who it reminds me of a little bit? Karl Marx, right? It's kind of the same thing with Karl Marx. You think back and you're like, this dude that came up with this idea of communism, and Karl Marx never actually was a leader of a communist country, right? He just wrote down the ideas of communism, and then it was tried how many different times, and so many millions of people have died as a result of this terrible idea. All of these ramifications down the road, all because one guy had some idea and did something he shouldn't have done. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Ansel Keys, right? We did this, we published this, and we started spreading it, and then we just accepted it as fact, and we went forward with that, and we are way worse off because of it. Think about where our world would be without that.
Yeah.
Without this recommendation of vegetable oils and cutting out our natural foods, so much damage has been done, just like so much damage has been done by the communism and its ideas.
Yeah.
And how many times it's been tried.
You know, it makes me, you know, for the longest time, the majority of my life that I was cognitive of these type of issues, I always believed that it would have been so nice to be alive in the 30s and 40s and 50s, right? Because people were more wholesome. And they were for
you
the
weren't
most
alive in the 30s, 40s.
Dude, you need to stop. I'm gonna reassign you. but yeah, I got it. Now you made me lose my train of thought. No, but yeah, so being a, you know, if you were alive in those times, how you think it would be, hey, people are more like-minded, right? I mean, because you have so much division now, right? And there's so much angst and hate and violence, and you know, there's always been those things. I'm not saying that. There just seems now that it's at an exponential level. And so you think, oh gosh, I wish I was born in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, right? And again, I don't want to downplay any of the problems of, you know, the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, or any century. But if I'm comparing the 30s, 40s, and 50s to the, you know, 10s, 20s, and 30s that we're getting ready to go into, sometimes we have we're in a terrible situation, but we're also in a situation of great information where people are educated, are getting more educated. They're starting to understand. And that awakening started, you know, very recently. You know, people woke up. And if you think about when, let's just take, you know, when Hitler came to rise, right? A lot of people stood around and did nothing. And mostly because they didn't know any better, right? They couldn't fact check him or do some research on him and find out his background. They didn't know anything about him but what they were hearing on the radio. You think about that today, we can fact check, you know, a lot of things, you know, or can definitely be a dichotomy of information on somebody or something that you can go out there and you have to run it through the principles of what truth is based on. And, you know, and usually truth is based on tradition, right? Tradition is the absence of error. That's why tradition becomes tradition, because it's already filtered out all the error. So, you know, when you put today's situations against tradition, then you start to see what's right and wrong. And now people, when they need to confirm or affirm, they can go out and do their own research. So we, in some ways, today is, yes, it's terrible, but we have an opportunity today to learn how to fight back. Back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, they didn't know to fight back. They were just, you know, this is gospel, right? Why show distrust? And they took advantage of that. They took advantage of the fact that they knew that everyone trusted them. And they were just as deceitful then as they are now.
So why did they intend to deceive? That's kind of the overwhelming question here. Mm-hmm. We've talked about all this, how it happened, why it happened, when it happened. But what was the behind the scenes? What is the true motivation for why this was brought into practice, brought into recommendation, and why it's been kept in for so long. Who and why did they want this?
Well, this will be somewhat philosophical, or I guess not even that, but more my interpretation of things, right? I mean, there's some evidence, you know, that you can go down, but it probably started, you know, it all probably goes all the way back to the Civil War, you know. The way the Civil War is viewed, I think, is somewhat flawed in its current view of what they thought it was all about slavery. It wasn't all about slavery. There was a lot of other key issues. And, you know, the North was portrayed as, you know, I know that everyone's going to probably get on me for this, but the North was portrayed as good and the South was portrayed as bad. That wasn't necessary. It wasn't as clean cut as that. So, you know, there has been deception. There has been an attempt to circumvent probably, I mean, maybe as early as when the Declaration of Independence was written, there's always been detractors that, like, I don't want this freedom. You know, freedom means we can't control, right? And when you have people like that, you know, it could, doesn't mean, you know, it's passed on from generation to generation, father to son, you know, going on and on and on. And there is, I think, there have been in some ways coordinated, in some ways, you know, just the prevailing attitude kind of plays in line from one year to the next. You take available an opportunity of evil that came down to you and you prolong it, or you grasp it and take it the next way down the field. So I think the point I'm trying to say is that, to put it in simple layman's terms, I think there has been a good 100 plus years, probably 150 years, attempt to overthrow our way of life. And it's just taking a long time because the Constitution was very, very well written. A lot of checks and balances in our system. And to steal the soul of America. And the only way to do that is some things that don't have to do with our show, but are important to understand. You know, disarm us, strip us of our freedoms, get us unhealthy, get us focused on sports, get us focused on our own health, get us distracted, basically. Distract us constantly so that we don't see what's going on. Now, that's just my big pie in the sky, what I'm seeing things going on that I can cover in, you know, 60 seconds versus trying to break that down, you know, by detail, what's happened over the last 150 years. But I think there's been a concerted effort, without a doubt, to control us for very nefarious reasons. Is that a good answer?
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. You took that all the way.
Yeah.
And I think that's very true. Mm-hmm. I mean, the powers at be don't like us having our freedom, don't like us having our health. And if I had to comment a little more specifically on why I think it happened the way it happened, I think at least a portion of it has to do with, okay, so if you are producing certain types of foods and you find that you can produce them and you can produce them cheaper than maybe other foods, you have an incentive to produce more of that. But then you have to be able to sell it. So think about vegetable oil, for example. Let's say that they discover they can produce vegetable oil. They can produce it cheaper and easier than they can produce red meat. They have more control over the production of it. Mm-hmm. They can produce it in these industrial buildings. They don't have to rely on farmers and ranchers to produce the cattle. And it's cheaper for them, they're going to want to do that. And then if they're going to produce it, they're going to have to sell it to people. Well, who would buy it if they don't know what it is and they don't think it's good for them? But if you put it out there in the media that it's good for you, then people are going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it, I'm taking maybe more of like a lobbyist stance. People will, people, businesses will lobby the government to get their product or their service or laws changed and stuff to help their business. So if you are the people that produce the vegetable oil, you're going to come in. And here's a good example of nowadays what we see. Think about the push for electric vehicles. Why is that being pushed so hard? There are insane tax credits and benefits you can get for buying an electric vehicle. You don't get that for buying a gas-powered vehicle.
No.
They're spreading all this stuff about how it's so bad for the environment to have a gas-powered vehicle. You now have an electric vehicle because then it's clean for the environment, which if we wanted to go down that rabbit hole, we could show how that's not actually the case. But why? Why do they produce that? Well, a lot of that boils down to the electric vehicle manufacturers. They are able to lobby the government, pay off the politicians to put certain bills in to get them to vote on certain bills that help in give incentive to people to purchase electric vehicles. And so it's kind of propped up by that. It's the same kind of concept back then. You had these companies and stuff that produced this vegetable oil, and they want to get it sold. So they, instead of just trying to advertise it like you would traditionally advertise your product, you go behind the backs, you go to, American Heart Association, you pay off the politicians to put people on the panel that are a certain way, you pay off the guys on the panel to do these studies, you pay them off to make sure that the results say exactly what you want them to say, you publish the results. You know, you pay off the media networks and everybody to produce it. And then, boom, now all of a sudden, everybody's buying your product.
Right.
So it's almost like they're spending this money to lobby, but then they're getting so much money back in return because everyone's buying the product now because they think it's going to be really healthy for them.
Right.
And I think at more of a lower level, that's what's going on, or that's what took place then. Same as some of the stuff that takes place now and some of the stuff that we are sold by the government.
Right. You know, I think that fast forward to what needs to be done going forward. And as I alluded to just a few moments ago, is that now we understand, for those that are awake, I mean, here's the thing. There is a vast majority of this country that practice willful ignorance. And that's because they don't want to. In some ways, I find health can be a uniting feature. I find a lot of people on both sides of the aisle are interested in being healthy. You know, so sometimes that's one aspect that we can kind of come to grips on. The only side that there is one side that believes in veganism that we absolutely do not. I guess the point is that everyone wants to be healthy, okay? So that it's not like that is a polarizing feature outside of, you know, practice and veganism, which is, I think veganism kind of died.
Yeah, but see, I would take it a little bit of a step back and I would say, I'm not sure, I think everybody wants to be healthy, but I'm not sure that we have a full agreement on what healthy is.
True.
And I think that's a little bit of the issue.
Yeah, no, that's 100%. We don't agree on what health needs to be, but we desire to feel healthy, right? And
yes.
So I think, you know, that being said, you know, because we have a great access to information, I think a lot. I mean, I'll just give you an example. I just had with someone I was advising on her diet. She's asked me at least 3 times, "Are you sure eggs are okay?" At least within weeks apart from each other, because I have her eating. Not actually, I only have her eating like 4 eggs a day, so it's nothing.
Not compared to you.
No, that's nothing. you know, and she's like, are you sure this isn't too many eggs? And you know, she's 70, I think she just turned 70. And, but it's indoctrinated into her, right? And I keep advising her. I said, I promise you, if you listen and you do this, you're going to feel healthy. And she, and I talked to her yesterday. She says she feels so much better. And she can wear a certain pair of pants she couldn't wear in the past, right? So her body's starting to change. Okay, so that's because we understand what animal-based fats are for us, or animal-based foods. They are what the body craves. They were designed for us to eat.
Yes, and that's where I go back to believe what you see, believe what you feel, believe what you experience. Because that same lady could then just go to the doctor, and doctor will say, well, yeah, it's good. You're losing weight. You're healthy. You feel better. But since you're eating eggs, you're gonna die from a heart attack in five years.
Yeah, that's exactly what she's facing. Yeah.
And but you ask yourself, well, how can that be possible when I'm experiencing all these things? And they've convinced us that it is possible, right? Who was the guy? There's somebody I was listening to. I wish I could remember who it was, but they were doing the carnivore diet. And they had the same thing where they went to a doctor and they told the doctor what they were doing. And the doctor told them, oh, you do that. They said, you'll be dead in 5 years.
Yeah. It's such
like, guaranteed you'll be dead in 5 years. Your body will heal, you know. And like this was well more than 5 years ago. Still alive, healthy, healthiest they've ever been, you know. So we think about that. We say, should we really trust what doctors say, given how incorrect that a lot of that guidance can be?
Well, think about our own NASM certifications, right? How they say, stay in your lane. That's a form of control, okay? We can see with using our brains, which we're supposed to do, using reason and logic and put it through the filter of truth, that they're lying. Okay, but we're supposed to stay in our lanes for litigious issues, right? We're not supposed to speak up when we know this information is killing people. It is putting them on the roller coaster of, I'm going to put you on this drug, which is going to have side effects, and they're going to cause other issues, and I'm going to put you on more drugs that cause more side effects. It's like that merry-go-round. So, person gets, we talked about this earlier, I have a friend that, she got two of the vaccine shots, immediately got a blood clot. Okay. She was extremely healthy before that. Doctor says, oh, you're going to go on statin. Like instantaneously, not conducting the vaccine shots at all with that situation. And, but she'd never had high blood pressure. She'd always been very healthy, had a healthy heart, all of that. And they put her on statin ASAP without, you know. And so you have to start going, well, why aren't we know what statin does to us. It's not, it definitely will lower cholesterol, but not more of a, it causes an issue of mortality because they want her like close to 100 points on the cholesterol level. Okay. That's not healthy. You're losing her joints. Once she started taking statin, her joints hurt all the time. Okay. Her muscles hurt. Okay. The moment she started that, and they wanted to up her dose, and she said, no, I can't do that. So I'm currently trying to find her a second opinion because, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm a certified personal trainer. And so, so she can get a second opinion, but she, you know, she wants to get off of it. And, you know, this is what we're facing, is that I have to be careful, you know, because I can't be given medical advice, right? But I definitely can advise her from the standpoint of, I think you need a second opinion on this, because the research is saying, and that's true, I can speak on the research is saying the opposite of what these doctors are prescribing. So that's what we're facing. We're being boxed in into lies. That's what's happening right now.
Well, they're making it to where the only people that can give advice medically are people who have went through their indoctrination program, which is medical school.
Exactly.
And medical training.
Exactly.
And so that if you've gone through our indoctrination and are willing to tell everyone exactly what we want you to say, then you can give advice. But then it's just the advice that they tell you to regurgitate. It's not actually true advice from your experience and your expertise as a doctor. It's just repeating information that you've been spoon-fed.
Right.
So it really isn't all that valuable.
No.
From that perspective. It's not really expertise. It's just... And, I mean, sometimes doctors have different opinions, because once you do get out of that, some doctors will begin to change their opinions because of what they experience, but not all of them.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know how to find one. So I have a question for you that relates to this that I wanted to pose to you, because this is one of the big issues with this myth and this misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
It is that... What is the reason why they say that the cholesterol and the saturated fat is bad? And what it boils down to is that cholesterol and saturated fat accumulates on the sidewalls of the arteries and clogs the arteries, and then the blood can't flow through, and then you have a heart attack.
I think it specifically, it's the particles... Or the of the LDL that clogs.
That's what
the oxidized. Well, that's what they'll say the LDL, but the it's really the oxidized particles, which is true. The oxidized particles, which are smaller, can get in the bloodstream and clog it. But just because you have high cholesterol doesn't mean you have oxidized LDL.
But what I hear so much from people is they have this misunderstanding that it's the fats. The animal fats that will harden in your arteries and clog them. Like, I will hear people say, oh, well, I want to make sure all my grease is drained out of my hamburger after I cook it so it doesn't get in and clog my arteries. Have you heard that one before?
My mom told me that.
Exactly. See, I found that so many people believe that.
They do.
That's how it works.
Right.
Like it's somehow the fat, the liquid fat, the grease will like permeate your blood barrier and get in there and then harden, which your body's at 98.6 degrees. There's no way that even if it did that it would harden at 98.6 degrees. It's still liquid at that point.
Yeah.
So that's just a...
Unless you have cold parts of your body.
Apparently,
which, you know, I mean, that would be if you're dead. But
that's not at all what happens.
No, I mean...
That's impossible.
You know, and grease from meat creates some of the best gravy you can imagine.
It does.
So, I mean, this is where we're at. We have a massive... You know, it's still... a lot of people, I would say... And again, I'm just going off my experience... And I think we've talked about this in the past, but I think that in general, those that go to the gym or do physical activities every day, about 40 to 50% are starting to get it. Okay. And then only 33% of the population goes to gyms. So you're looking at 16 to 20%. That understand what healthy means.
But see, here's what I would say about right now. One of the great things about the time that we're living in is that every day that number is increasing.
It is.
And it's increasing by a more increasing rate every day. It's exponentially growing. It's going up above. I mean, look at we have, I'm not necessarily a huge RFK Jr. fan, but one thing he definitely has right is he preaches about nutrition and health in this country
and
how messed up it is and how it should be against seed oils, pro red meat, anti big pharma, all of these things. And that's getting attention at the national stage now for probably the first time ever since this, since these studies and stuff and this new nutritional guidelines have been in place. For the first time, it's getting national attention, and you have a major party candidate for president, former president Donald Trump, that's aligning with him and giving him a voice on his stage too. So you have RFK being a, and I think he said he would put him in his cabinet or something as like health secretary or something.
It sounds so, like he would be good because I heard him talking about how bad seed oils are for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. So we have the potential for the first time in a very, very long time to have somebody in a leadership position of the health in this country that could actually have our best interests in mind. So this stuff's spreading like wildfire, this stuff that we've been talking about and that we're talking about, it's all over social media. People are picking it up that have big followings and then posting about it. You know, people with major platforms are spreading this information and getting it out to everybody, and people are doing their own research. They're looking into it. They're trying it out for themselves, right? Because now they don't know what to trust because they're saying, well, this has been told for me for so many years. Now you're saying this, all this different stuff. So people are starting to understand that they have to try it themselves in order to actually understand what is truth. They're trying it themselves. They're figuring out that it works. They're buying and they're believing and they're spreading the word. And it's like a virus or a disease spreading. It's exponential. It spreads to from one person to two to four to eight to 16, you know, and it just keeps doubling. And pretty soon, I mean, we're already in the process of the Great Awakening, but pretty soon, I mean, you're going to have a whole population of people that are awake to this and understand this, and it's going to be great.
Well, here's what's going to happen. 10 years from now, when, you know, well over half the population is finally understanding animal-based products is the way to go. And, you know, if we're not, there's two directions the country go. We either will be under a dictatorship eating bugs, or we'll be...
I won't be eating bugs.
I mean, in general. Or you'll have over half the population understands animal-based products and they're eating animal-based products. And they're going to be, what's going to happen is I'll be a trainer and they'll come in and say, you should really be teaching your clients about eating animal-based products like they're teaching me something new. And I'll just smile and go, okay, well, finally, if someone comes and tells me that, I know we're heading in the direction. There's not a time that I've given nutritional advice where they are not surprised about eating animal-based products. I mean, it's almost 90% of the time. I mean, sometimes you'll get some people to have some understanding, but having a full understanding that here's what blows people's minds every time. That you don't need to eat vegetables. You could go your entire life and not eat them and you'd be fine. They're not necessary. When you tell people that, it's just like, like their mind
head explodes.
And, you know, when they don't have that understanding that everything that's necessary is in a piece of meat, you know, that's because what Alan Keyes started, you know, 80 years ago.
Well, that's another piece of it that I think a myth that I want to touch on real quick is we have sort of spread in this country that the idea that eating healthy has to suck and it has to taste bad and it has to be a very unpleasant experience. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Right.
If you think that, get that out of your mind. Because that's what people think. Oh, vegetables suck. I don't like eating them. And I got to eat all these vegetables and blood. I do need to eat healthy, but ooh, it sucks and it tastes bad. And no, because that's why you don't do it. Because you have it in your mind that it sucks. And so you don't want to. But see, I love to eat healthy because it tastes so good. And I look forward to the things that I eat every day because they taste so good. I don't have to worry about, yes, I eat vegetables. No, I don't eat that much vegetables. And I, you know, can eat the ones that I enjoy. But I look forward to the foods that I eat that are also healthy because they taste good. A steak to me tastes amazing. Some eggs with some raw cheese on them, some fruits and vegetables that are organic and don't have chemicals on them, some raw milk straight from the cow.
Oh, that's the best. I mean, I every time I do it, every time when I go buy raw milk, I take a swig of it when I'm in the car. Before I even get home, I was like, I got to have a swig. It's so good.
That's what I tell people. I was at the picking up some raw milk the other day from the farm stand, and there was some people in there that were looking at the products, and they had never had raw milk before. And I'm over here like buying, you know, like gallons of it, you know, and they're like, raw milk, like, how, we've never had that before, but like, we're thinking about trying it. And they're like, is it good? I'm like, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, what's it taste like? And I said, I looked at him and I said, it tastes like drinking ice cream. And they're like, what? And obviously, it's not quite as sweet as ice cream, but it kind of does. It's so good.
I find it extraordinarily refreshing.
Yes.
It's so refreshing. It's like I can't, like I drink it. I bought a half gallon about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I could have just sat there and drank the whole thing. That's how good it is. But I was saving it for my shakes, right? Because I can make my shakes with it.
Makes the shakes way better.
Oh, man. I mean... And, you know, not that Hershey syrup is good, but you put a little Hershey syrup in that. Oh, man.
Just a treat every now and then.
Oh, man, yeah, that's so good.
You're right.
But the point is that there's a difference. What is the difference? So as I can say it, is that there's a healthy taste, right? What I mean by healthy taste is that you know what you're eating is healthy, which makes it taste even better. And then there is, and for that's the only word I can think of, when you have a product, and I excuse the language here, but if you have a product or a drink or something and the taste is orgasmic, something's wrong. Like addictive type of taste. Like I can't get enough. Like it's triggered something in me. Eat, 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 eat. Okay, I've come to recognize that taste, right? That something that tastes like this means they've added something that's not natural. And those are the only words I can think of, is that, you know, it's kind of like eating. Now I've eaten enough healthy food now. When I eat a Dorito, I'm like, ugh, because I know what it does to me. I've connected that taste with unhealthy. So when I eat it, if I take a bite of a Dorito, I'll be like, that I'm almost repulsed, right? Because I know that taste is connected. To have that intense of a flavor means that's not natural, versus the freshness of raw milk or the taste of a good steak, right? So they're putting things in these processed foods that trigger something in the brain.
Yes, it's different, but it's still good. To eat healthy, and that's, I think, that's the attitude that everyone needs to have. It doesn't taste like it does to eat donuts or, you know, drink sugary milkshakes.
Yeah.
But it still tastes so good, especially once you give it some time. Maybe not day one, right? But day 50, you're going to have reset your taste buds, and you're going to start to understand what healthy actually tastes like, and you're going to love it.
Yeah, you will. I mean, all the clients I've given meal plans to, every single one, probably about 8 of them, because I don't do them a lot, but 8 of them all came back and said they feel better. Every single one of them. They feel better because they're eating what the body's supposed to eat.
And that's a whole other part of it, too. When we think about enjoying our diet and our eating, we can't just focus on the initial taste when it hits our mouth. That's not enough. We need to focus on what is it like, you know, the aftertaste all the way down to the digestion and how it makes our body feel. Because I noticed that too, is sometimes when I'm eating a unhealthy, like processed food, like the initial you bite into, you taste, oh, that's really good, and you swallow it, and then like the aftertaste left in your mouth sometimes sucks.
Yeah.
Right? And then you're like eating more of it to get rid of the aftertaste and get that taste back again. But if it's a good, healthy food, like you won't feel that way at all.
Mm-mm.
You know, your digestion won't feel bad either. That's the main thing I've noticed with, we do only our breads are only sourdough now. And with like the good kind of flour, the non-enriched, non-bleached flour.
Right.
And I noticed that too. Like I can sit down and eat the bread and it tastes better.
Yep.
And then I don't have the digestive issues.
I think if you go into some of the main grocery stores, they don't have anything that's called a non-enriched bread or flour.
No, it's hard to find.
Yeah, it is hard to find.
I can't remember where my wife's able to find it, but there's like one store where she can find it.
Yeah, or you can order it online, but it's not something they sell in the grocery stores. It's all enriched, all of it. And so, note, guys, you see enriched flour, don't buy it. I know that's all they have, so you're going to have to. Like I said, over and over and over, food is not easy. Good food is not easy to come by. You have to put in the work to get it.
But it's out there, and it's becoming more and more prevalent because more and more people are are understanding this. Like, oh, this is how we should eat. But then they're looking for a source of it. You know, it's kind of like there's a lot of people starting to raise chickens for eggs, you know, raise animals for meat, grow a garden, all this stuff. And then what happens is they end up with extra, and they're like, because they want to eat healthy, so they start doing these things. Then they end up with extra, and they're like, well, I got it. Well, it has something to do with the extra, right? So then they give it or, you know, sell it to other people, neighbors around, and that's spreading too. That's spreading like wildfire. All of a sudden, I'm seeing, you know, people put farm stands in their front yard to sell their eggs from their chickens and their produce and stuff. And it, you know, you used to never be able to see them. Now I drive by three on my way to work, you know, or whatever. And it's everywhere.
Right.
And it's becoming more and more accessible. You know, try it yourself, do it yourself, or find some neighbors that do. Get it from locally around you, and small steps, right? You're not going to overhaul it all in one day. You're not going to go from, I'm on a processed food diet, all my food's, you know, in packages and boxes and shipped from other countries or across the country, to boom, I'm all natural, organic, unprocessed, you know, steaks, meats, vegetables, fruits. You're not going to do that overnight.
No.
But set a couple of small goals. Hey, I want to find a local person who's got some backyard chickens that has some extra that I can start getting eggs from. And commit to that and find that and find you a good sort and do that. And if you have to get your own chickens, right? But check that box.
Right.
Then the next box. Right. So then pick something different. Right. I want to be able to have fresh vegetables in the summertime, you know, so I'm going to plant a little garden, or I'm going to, you know, find a neighbor that plants some vegetables or something, and I'm going to be able to get some from them. And just small steps over time, you'll be amazed where you end up in a year or two.
Yeah.
Go to farmers markets, you know, whatever it is.
Like I said, eating healthy is a lifestyle change in more ways than you can count. Right. It is, and I tell everyone, it's going to take you a good 6 months to a year to fully get clean, because you have to change the way you sleep, where you buy, you know, how you eat, you know, weed yourself off of, and learning to eat enough. A lot of people don't eat enough, right? So there's in getting the right macros to whatever your goals are. So it's a lifestyle change, that because you have to set time aside for meal prepping. You have to set time to go to special places to buy the food that's healthy. It's not an easy thing. So, but if your health is important to you, the more people that do this over time, you know, money helps drive what is available to us. And if you learn to eat healthy, and you are becoming the majority of the population that eats healthy, and less people are shopping at the grocery stores, what does that mean? They start changing, not putting processed foods and stuff. So,
and the number one thing to remember through all this is, don't just take the mainstream media or the government recommendations as gospel without doing your own research.
Well, I think I'd go a step further. I'd say if you don't do your research, probably 99% sure what they're saying is false.
Well, the only reason I word it the way I word it is because we could end up in a situation where we do get somebody who's in charge of health in this country that is saying the right things and recommending the right
True.
Things. And if that's the case, you still need to do your own research. You still need to test stuff for yourself. But if you find that what they're saying is accurate, then you can just continue to follow what you did your own research and what you found. But then if what they're saying is wrong, you also can find that through your own research and testing and then follow what's actually right.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I was referring more to mainstream media and how they cover things. So,
yeah.
You know, when they report things, you can pretty much guarantee there's a high likelihood, and I was probably exaggerating, but that they're leading you astray.
Can you imagine what it would be like if we had somebody like RFK in charge of the nutrition and health, and he's like saying these things, recommendations, the way the mainstream media will react?
Oh, it's going to, it could revolutionize our health industry. He could single-handedly do that. He could,
but the mainstream media will be attacking so hard.
Oh, yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Absolutely. Yeah. So.
Well, guys, lots of good stuff dropped today. A great deep dive into the history of nutritional guidance in this country and what it looks like. Some very valuable information and a lot of fresh perspectives today.
Yes.
So definitely something to think about. Definitely something to chew on a little bit.
Guys, you have a great weekend, and we will catch you next week. And this is episode 34.
Yep, episode 34. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll be back with more.
Out.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.